All right, good morning to everyone. L'chol ha'mazinim. So this is actually a shiur I gave a few times in different forums, but I want to actually record. I don't think it's been recorded. In fact, I gave it over Sukkot to a group of college women entitled The Punishment of Chava.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
The Punishment of Chava. Punishment, of course, being quotation marks, because as we'll see, it's not a punishment. So just going back to Parshas Bereishis, the story of Adam and Chava and their creation and their sin. All right, it's Chava who provokes the sin, encouraged, induced by the Nahash, the snake. She eats from the tree, then she gives her husband to eat from the tree as well, Adam. And then God intervenes and tells them, essentially, the jig is up, and there'd be certain countermeasures, certain penalties that apply as a result of their sin. Number one, El Ha'isha Amar. So God said to the woman, Harbo arbe itzvonech veheronech. I will surely increase your pain, your suffering, and the pain of a childbirth, heronech. Be'etzev tel dibanim, you will give birth amid pain, anguish. Ve'elishech teshukaseich, and to your husband will be your desire, your desire will remain for him. V'hu yimshal bach, and he will rule over you, he will dominate you. All right. Anybody have a problem with that? I just thought I would ask before we continue. Only one problem. All right, that's pretty good. I expected worse. Okay. So what Chava did, of course, was inexcusable, eating from the forbidden tree at the behest of the Nahash and giving it to Adam to ensure that they would share the same fate. The question really is, how does the punishment fit the crime? In other words, the fact that she gave him from the tree to eat, so how does that merit itzvonech, heronech, be'etzav tel dibanim? What are we talking about? Rashi says, it's vanech, number two, zetzar gidul bonim. This is the pain of raising children. All right, children are always a source of concern, anxiety for parents, no matter how old the parent is. Veheronech, zetzar ha'ibur. This is the pain of pregnancy. All right, what do I know from that? But I've only been an observer. There's certain pain, discomfort, morning sickness, etc. Be'etzav tel dibanim, you'll give birth in pain as well. Zetzar haleida, this is the pain of childbirth itself. Well, one thing that's interesting is it's a strange order the Torah has. If we accept Rashi, and Rashi follows the Gemara in Erev and Daf Kuf Amud Beis, you have the pain of child rearing, of pregnancy, and birth. What should the order be? Chronologically, pregnancy, birth, and child rearing. So why is the order, what is the order then? What do you say?
I would say that raising the children lasts a heck of a lot longer than the 9 months of pregnancy.
Yes, that's very good. So you're talking about long-term pain of child rearing. Then you have the short-term suffering of pregnancy, 9 months. And then the very, very momentary pain of childbirth itself. So in fact, that's the order the Torah gives us, that the long, the short, and the momentary. Ve'elishech teshukaseich. And again, we're trying to understand why. Why does all these different sources of anguish become the punishment for the sin? As at the outset, Chazal never saw it as a punishment. It's never referred to as an onesh. It's referred to in the Gemara Ervin as a klala, as a curse. Why that should be a curse, we also have to discuss. V'hu yimshal bach, and he will rule over you. I'm sorry, v'elishech teshukaseich. So Rashi says, elishech teshukaseich, that's latashmish, regarding marital relations, that a woman's desire will be for her husband. V'afal pichein, nonetheless, ein loch meitzach l'tovo befeh. She doesn't have the brazenness to seek that type of gratification. Orally, verbally, he'll be the one that demands it more. I have to understand Rashi is saying that in a general sense, I think it used to be true, women were much more demure, much more reticent. Men have a much more active libido and are much more aggressive in this area. I just have to look at the news in the last week and we realize that. So men are much more aggressive in this area. So that's the type of memshola we're talking about here. I should say at the outset that v'hu yimshol bach is a very famous phrase. It's always bound to get a rise out of people, especially women, but I think that's because of an epic distortion that entered into the phrase, or that was imposed on the phrase through Christianity, that really shaped history. It's because of this notion of v'hu yimshol bach that the Christian world always held till modern times, really, that a woman could not hold property, a woman could not vote, that women had to be inferior and subservient, etc. We never really had that approach. I mean, according to the law of the Torah, a woman, of course, can own land and work. I think a lot of men prefer that their wives work while they do other things, learn and whatever it is. And it's not an easy... So you see, Rashi doesn't refer it at all to a question of subservience or inferiority, just a question of their sexual relationship, that the man will be much more aggressive in that sense, the moshel, and the woman much more passive, more the recipient. We'll see the Ramban in a moment, but it's interesting that moshel is an interesting word. Moshel. So the Gra says famously in the pasuk we say every morning in the davening, "Ki Lashem Amlucha Hu Moshel Bagoyim," that the kingdom is for God and He rules over the nations. What's the difference between a melucha and a memshala, between a melech and a moshel, a king and a ruler? So the Gra said a melech is accepted willingly by his subjects. That's Ki Lashem Hamlucha, referring to us, that we accept God willingly. Umoshel bagoyim, that he rules over the nations. A moshel is someone who rules against the will of his subjects. So now at least you see where the Torah is coming from. If in fact for Uyim Shabach, it's not going to be a very willing type of subservience. And that, unless the relationship is formulated properly, it's going to be actually quite acrimonious. So it's never meant in terms of power, nor wasn't meant in terms of politics or rights. It is a different focus. Ramban says here, number 5, it's the top left, he quotes Rashi's pshat about the reticence that exists in the marital relationship, quotes Lashon Rashi, and then he says, Ve'inenu nachon, he says, it's not true. Ki zeh shevach b'isha. No, if a woman is, how shall we say, eager, that's praise for her. It means they'll have a good relationship. You know, everyone will be happy. So how does the Ramban understand this phrase of ve'elov teshukaso, ve'lishech teshukaseich, ve'hu yimshol bach, v'anochom be'enai shehenish oso shetia nichsefes me'od ol ba'ilo, ve'lo tachosh letzar ha'herayon v'aleido. Oh, that's already a fascinating insight that the Ramban has. It means the Ramban relates the whole pasuk together, that if in fact all these things carry with it a certain amount of discomfort, pain, anguish, suffering, whether it's short-term, momentary, short-term, long-term, a woman will say, Mali v'latzar hazas, so what do I need it for? Why have children if it's going to just produce pain, right? With pregnancy or birth, etc. Why do it? So the Torah says, notwithstanding that she knows on some level that there is pain involved, she will have an instinct that desires both to connect with her husband as well as to have children. It's a nice insight. In Chazal say elsewhere, I didn't put it on the sheet here, but that's why Yoledes, oh, you'll tell me if it's true, that's why Yoledes brings as part of her potpourri of offerings a karban chatos. But Chazal says it's impossible to give birth with the pain that accompanies it and not have at least a fleeting thought, maybe on an unconscious level, why am I doing this? I'll never do this again. All right. Does that actually happen?
Okay. With the sixth child,
it happened. All right, that's a good approach.
I have friends who did it after the first.
After the first. So it does happen. Yes. See, so that's what Chazal said. That's why one brings a karma chatos, because of that thought. But now you see how the Ramban links it. Notwithstanding, that's the reality. The truth is that the pain is the pain. I'm not going to minimize the pain. But then when the child comes and the mother holds the child, the pain starts to recede. And then as the mother gets to interact with the child, watch the child grow and develop, and she influences the child, then the pain really does recede completely until the maternal instinct is reawakened and the mother desires another child as well. That's really the pattern of life, and that's what the Ramban is talking about. That's what the Pasuk means here as well. Now, regarding V'hu Yimshal Bach, the Ramban says something different than Rashi as well, that this is measure for measure. V'hu Yimshal Bach, because he or she led him astray. Kihi nosna gam le'isha v'yochal b'mitzvasa. That she gave him to eat, she gave her husband to eat, and he ate at her command. So she told him what to do. Eat this, eat the fruit. And he listened. The ansha, so punishment then, is shalotiyahi mitzava olav od, that she will not be able to command him anymore. V'yitzava oleha kol ritzono, but he'll be able to command her his every wish, his will. Yes. How's that worked out? Not well. Not well at all. But that's how Ramban understands it. Again, not in terms of politics or legal rights, but in terms of the dynamic of their relationship. V'yim shobach, he'll be less apt to listen to her than she will be to listen to him. We'll get back to that a little later, because even that's not entirely clear how it works out. All right, so we have to ask the question again, so what does all this have to do with the chait? If the chait was giving her husband to eat, after God had commanded him not to eat from the tree, so how does any of this relate to chait at all? Okay. Right. By the way, one part should make look at number 9. It's the Medrash in the Bereishis Rabbah here, Parsha Chaf, on the left side, that just to show how Chazal understood it, V'hu Yimshobach, Omer B'Yaseh Glili, Yachol Memshala Mikol Tzad, lest you think that it refers to all types of dominion, that a woman has to be inherently subservient. It's not true. Tamaloma lo yachabol rechaim v'rochev. You should not take the pledge of the upper and lower millstone. All right, what does that mean? An upper lower millstone is used for grinding. So if a poor person uses that for grinding, you can't take that as a pledge to ensure that he repays his debt. What's the connection? So this is in a parsha, in just a few psukim. The Torah begins, Ki yikach ish isha, when a man marries a woman, he doesn't have to go to battle for a year, he can't impose any obligations for a year. Naki yelaveso shonachos, he has to be free for his wife for a year. V'simach es ishto asher lakoch, and he's obligated to cause his wife to rejoice that entire year. Shona rishona of marriage. Appended to that parsha, means bracketed off really, is this pasuk, Lo yachabo rechaim v'rochev ki nefesh u'chavel. So what's the connection between the two? What does that have to do with V'yim Shobach? Ma'aseh b'yisho achas mishol beis Tveryonus. Certain woman from the house of Tveryonus, Shehoya nesua l'listim echad. She was married to a brigand, meaning to a thief. A low life. Her husband was a bum. V'hoya ba'la mitzara. Not only was he a miscreant vis-a-vis others, but he used to abuse her as well. Shomu chachamim, uvo et solo chicho. The chachamim heard, and they came to her, they came to the house in order to rebuke her. You rebuke him for abusing his wife. Kevon shebosu lefnei chachamim, as soon as they came to her, hotzia lefneihem minorah shel zahav, v'ner shel cheres al gabo. She brought out to them a menorah of gold and a candle of cheres, of earthenware, the cup that holds the candle. That cup was made of earthenware, charas, cheap. It was a put on a golden candelabra, all right? L'kayem ha-shenemar v'lishech t'shukosech. To fulfill the pasuk that her desires for her husband. Okay, so what's the Medrash talking about? It's interesting. So what does she say? Why did she bring out the menorah shel zav and the ner shel charas?
Is that a stolen object?
I would hope not. Could have been, but no. She's making a different point. Lo yachab orechaim v'rochev means that the upper and lower millstone work together. You know, the two stones, they grind. If you take one away, it's useless. That's what a marriage is. You need the two stones working together. So she said to the chacham who came to rebuke her husband that this is our marriage. We are Echaim v'Rochev. We are upper lower millstone. Granted that in this marriage there's a menorah shel zahav, me, meaning the wife, and there's a ner shel charas. There's a bum on top. But nonetheless, he's my bum. Ve'elishech teshukasech. All right. So her desires for her husband. Yes? Comments?
Okay.
And this is a certain loyalty that exists. And that we'll see, that loyalty is at the very heart of marriage. That's what keeps the family together. You know, I don't know if it's like that anymore today. Certainly, I think we all remember a time when it was that divorce was a very rare option. It was a discouraged option. And now, so what that meant is, I guess in the worst case scenario, husband, wife, effected some type of cold peace between them. Or in the better scenario, they had to work on their marriage. Problems arose, whatever it was, and they worked on it. You don't see the same desire today for people to work on their marriage, you know. It's just, like everything else, just disposable. What's that?
Disposable.
Take the easy way out. Just move on.
We live in a disposable society.
That's correct.
You used to fix a toaster that was broken. You don't do that. You throw it out.
Yes. You know, my father said to me the other day that I think we're eating, must have been on Shabbos, and the yahrzeit candle is still there from Shemini Atzeres. So I remember, you'll remember also, that when we were young,
the glazer used glass, to drink tea.
People used those yahrzeit glasses for tea.
To bake also.
A cup of flour,
right. A cup of sugar.
Yes, I remember that. Karen has no memory of that, but I remember that. But so my father said, what are you doing with these glasses? I said, we're going to throw them out. Who keeps them anymore today?
We recycle.
Yeah. Yes, the good citizens do that. That's true.
Yes, we do.
All right. But like you say, everything's disposable today, even marriage as well. I mean, I think the whole point here is talking about marriage, which is really, unfortunately, under siege in America. I think fewer people today in America are married than any time since they started to keep records of such a thing. And now they bandy about a word that also, I hear it, I just laugh, fiancé. Any two people that are shacking up or have a child together, she becomes a fiancé. I mean, back in the day, a fiancé was someone you were marrying, you had a ring and a date after a proposal. That was a fiancé. No, anybody. I could have three fiancés the way it works out today. So that's a problem. But you see, the loyalty that exists, the fact that she was able to, see something in him, all right? He's not a complete loss. He may be a charis, but he's an heir. And he attaches to her menorah shel zav. So that itself was something. All right, so what does all this teach us? Of course, we're talking here, turn the page for 1 second just to give you a little background where we're coming from. When did all this happen, by the way? This event, the sin of Adam.
First day.
The first day of creation. It was before the first Shabbos. This is Yom HaShishi, one long day. So Gemara says, it's number 10, on the flip side, Me'secha Sanhedrin, Daflam and Chesam at Beis, Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Bar Chanina. That day was 12 hours, broken into 12 hours, like every day is. But it was quite a day. Shorishono, the first hour of the day, Hutzbar Ofaro, God, so to speak, gathered the dust from which Adam would be created. Shnia, the second hour, Nasegolam, he was made into a form. Shlishis, Nimtuchu Evarov, his limbs were put together. Revius, in the fourth hour, Nizr Kabonashama. Vayipach Bapo, Nishmas Chayim. God threw a soul into him. Chamishas in the fifth hour, Amar Araglov stood up. Shishas, the sixth hour, Kara Shemos, he called, he defined all the animals, gave them names. Shvias, the seventh hour, Nizdav Galo Chava. In the seventh hour, he was paired together with Chava. Pretty quick shidduch. Shminis, Ol Mita Shnaim V'yardu Arba'a. In the eighth hour, he appeared in the seventh, eighth hour, Adam being a quick worker, they went to bed as two, they lived together, and they woke as four. Meaning, that's a speedy childbirth. Cain and his twin sister. Tishias, the ninth hour, Nistaves Shalom Lechol Min Ha'ilan. They were commanded not to eat from the tree, or he was commanded not to eat from the tree. Asiris, the tenth hour, Sarach, he sinned. Achat Tisrei, the 11th hour, Nidoni was judged. That's a speedy trial. Shteim Esrei, Nitrad V'halachlo. In the 12th hour, he was already kicked out of Gan Eden, Shenemar Odom Mikar Ba'yolin. That was the longest day. Forget the movie. That was the longest day. You see, Adam was formed, married, children, sinned, tried, punished, sentenced, gone, executed. The sentence was executed. He was sent out of Gan Eden. But what does all that mean? It means the whole story is part of the creation process of man and woman. That this is not an extraneous story. But this story tells us exactly how man and woman were created, with the natures that with which they were created, and what that implies for us today. So many of the ideas I'm sharing this morning, I heard from my Rebbe, Rabbi Chait, many, many years ago. Shall live and be well. So let's understand what happened leading up to the Chait. Let's go back to the first page, number 3. It's Perek Beis and Breishis. Vayikach Hashem Elokim Eso Adam, Vayanichei Began Eden La'avdo U'Lishamra. God took man, he was alone now, he was created, placed him in Gan Eden to work it, to preserve it. Vayitzav Hashem Elokim al Adam lemor, mikol eitz hagan achol tochel, you can eat from any tree in the garden, umeitz hadas tov hara lo socha mimenu, but from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, you cannot eat therefrom. Ki b'yom hachocha mimenu, most to most, the day you eat from the tree will be the day that you die. So in fact, see, unlike the chronology in the Gemara, Adam was given the command regarding the tree before Chava was created from him. Vayomer Hashem Elokim. So right after that chait, right after that warning, that tzivoy, the commandment, God says, Lo tov hayos Adam levado, eselo ezer kinegdo. There's no reason why, it's not good for man to be alone. I'll make him a helpmeet opposite him. Vayitz Hashem Elokim min Adama kochayas ha-sodeh v'skol of ha-shamayim. Vayavei Adam l'ros ma-yikro lo v'chol shekelo Adam nefesh chayu shmo. But before doing anything, before creating Chava, God chose another approach. He brought all the animals, all the fowl before Adam to see what he would call them. And in fact, whatever man named those animals, he was able to ascertain their nature. So that became the names of the animals. And man gave names to all the domesticated animals, all the birds, all the wild animals. And again the Torah repeats, Uladam lo motza ezer kinegdo, he did not find a helpmeet opposite him. The Rashi says that Adam tried to mate with every animal, but he didn't find his ben zug, he didn't find a partner. I mean, he didn't find anyone with whom he could have a psychological bond. The animals, at least, were similar to him somewhat in form, but not in kind, not with a neshama, not with a tzam elokim. He did not feel any bond to them. Ve'apel Hashem elokim tardema lo adam, ve'yishon v'yikach achas mitzal asov, ve'ezgor basar tachteno. So God caused Adam to fall into a deep sleep, and he did. And God took one of Adam's sides, closed the side up. Ve'even Hashem elokim esat seila shelokach min Adam liisha vaviyeh el ha'adam. And then God took that side from that he took from man, made a woman out of it, and brought her to the man, to Adam. Yes.
That whole story, like
that whole notion that they were together, and then there's the second.
Yeah, the stories divert somewhat in the first parak of Bereishis and the second parak of Bereishis. For the simple reason, the first parak, the Torah is talking about the general process of creation and man just being the pinnacle of creation. So it discusses the entire Masa Bereishis until Shabbos itself. Then the Torah backtracks and discusses the specifics of the creation of man and woman.
So
everything else, yes. After, right. You guys, you know, the Gemara says that the original man had both a female and male male and female dimensions, and then they were separated. The point is, this is the most critical point, is that Chava was not an independent creation. Chava was created from Adam in order to give him this psychological attraction to her. And that's what he said. Vayomer Adam. Whereas before he had not had any affinity with the animals, now he said, Zos hapam, now etzem etzamai, vasami psari, now bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh, lezos ikare isha, kime ish, lukacha zos. This one will be called woman, isha, meaning me ish, she was taken from me. What attracted him to her? Granted, she's the only woman around. What's that?
What he saw of himself.
Narcissism, exactly. He's something from him, so he was drawn to her. And this really becomes the framework by which you understand marriage. Just like Adam found something from him that was now restored to him, that was missing, and so he was made whole. That's essentially the process of marriage as well. That two people get together, deficient in their own ways, but together they form a whole. All right, that's the tzivui. By the way, when did she get the name Chava? After the Chait. That's in number one, it's Pasuk Chav. After Chava received her Klala, and after Adam received his Klala, only then does the Pasuk say, Vayikra Adam Shem Ishto Chava, Ki Hi Haysa Eim Kol Chai. Then he renamed her Chava. She was first called Isha, all right? Woman. And now he called her Chava. So why was she named Chava then, after the Chait, and not before the Chait? Especially as we know that she had already had two children, Cain and the twin, before the Chait. Okay. Now, let's understand. I think to understand Chava, we first have to understand Adam as well, because we could ask the same question about Adam's fate as we did about Chava. What's the connection between the punishment and the crime? So let's go back to number one. Pasuk Yitzayin. U l'adam amar, ki shamate l'kol ishtecho, v'tocha mino eitz asher tzivisich alemor lo socha mimenu. God said to man, because you listened to your wife, and you ate from the tree that I commanded you not to eat therefrom, aroh adamah ba'avurecho, the land will be cursed because of you. You will eat also with pain. No, same word. There's a pain involved in what happens to the woman, and there's a pain involved in what a man now has to do as well. Not only that, you'll have thorns and thistles grow around you. You'll eat the grass of the field. You'll eat bread by the sweat of your brow, ad shuvcha el adama, until you return to the earth, ki mimenu lukachta, from which you were taken, ki afar ata ve'el afar tashuv, because you are dust and to dust you will return. And then, only then, vayikra adam shem ishto chava, ki hi haysa ein kol chai. Then he names his wife again Chava because she was Em Kochai. So what does all this have to do with the Chait as well? The Chait was eating from the tree. How does eating from the tree eventuate in the cursing of the ground and the difficulty man has in sustaining himself physically? So this has an answer. The Medrash says that there was an immediate consequence of the Chait that they felt. Remember, right before, they had nothing to wear, they were naked, they were not at all embarrassed, not ashamed, and as soon as they ate from the tree, right away they had a sense of shame about them. They knew that they were unclothed. Something changed. And in fact, when God confronted them, God said to them, "Who told you that you were naked?" There was no concept before that. All right, so what's the pshat? So the Medrash says that before, and the Rambam elaborates on this in the first paragraph of the Morah, that before Adam sinned, he had a yetzara mi bachutz. His yetzara was outside him, meaning the drive for the instinctual was aroused only by sight or smell or taste. It was something external to him. If he didn't see it, he wouldn't be moved, wouldn't be aroused, wouldn't be stimulated at all. But after the chait, the yetzara was internalized. It became a yetzara mibifnim, inside us. So man became consumed with fantasies. Not only that, a world of tov hara, things that would be good, things that would be bad. Man had a new self-awareness, because now he realized that desire was something that would always encroach upon his life, make his life more difficult, occupy his thoughts, his mind, maybe a lot of his deeds, and worse than that. So you see, what happened to Adam is, whereas before he needed some external stimulus to arouse him, now it was internalized. Not only that, but see, what happened was, when man was when Adam ate from the tree, see, man was given the opportunity to create himself, to choose what his nature would be. That was his share, his partnership, so to speak, in creation. When he chose that, he realized the great loss that he had, because now people spend their days really pursuing fantasies, some healthy, some not so healthy, and they're just consumed by a desire for different types of gratification that is not always capable of fulfillment. What happened after that? So you see, man's sin was in the realm of taiva, in the realm of desire. Now that he had a yetzara mibifnim, man's pursuit of his physical gratification had to be limited. Otherwise, he would just become a more intelligent behemoth. All right. The sad thing is, a lot of people today live as intelligent behemoths, just using their minds in order to acquire the various desires that they want in life, but thinking no more deeply about life, and certainly doing nothing that enriches the soul. That was a fate that man could not have, that threatened creation. So that's what happened. Arad ama bavurecha, the land will be cursed. You'll have to work. Bitzavon tachalana. Kotz v'dardar tatzmiach loch. You'll never find the fulfillment of a perfect fantasy. No matter what you have, it's not going to be as idyllic, as pristine as the fantasy was. And the ability of men even to pursue his fantasies would be limited by day. How do people spend most of their days? If you had to judge people's hours, working. All right? Whatever else you're going to do, they're working. And so the time that man has really to sin is limited. It wasn't like that before. I should add, because we read Parshas Noach this week, that the punishment was a relative one. Arad ama bavurecha, still already in Noach's generation, people had to sow once, and the earth would produce for 40 years. And that itself did not help the Dor HaMabul, because they became also gluttonous, parasitic, not to mention evil. And so the earth had to be recreated after that to the environment that we have today, where if you want to eat, you have to plant every year, you have to harvest, you have to do things, you have to be even busier. So after the Chet HaMabul, the Chet of the Dor HaMabul, then the situation had to be changed. But here already, man's capacity for evil had to be limited. And that's why, since his sin was in the realm of pursuit of the material, the tree, so his pursuit of the material had to be limited. All right, so how does that teach us anything about Chava? So Elisha Amar Harbar Betzvonech Veheronech Be'etzav Taldibanim Ve'lishet Shukosech V'hu Yimshol Bach. Well, man's klala related to his conquest of the material world. Chava sabotaged that by exploiting man's weakness. What's man's weakness? Man's weakness is the physical. Taiva gave into it. So what she was doing in essence was negating or minimizing his capacity to seek ruchnius. So his range of fantasy had to be circumscribed to reduce the possibility of failure. That's what happened to Adam. What was Chava's weakness? All right. Now it's a sensitive point. What was Chava's weakness? And you see it right away from the way she spoke to the Nachash. Or the Nachash said to Visam Kelokim, Yodei Tov Ara. Why would she think she could be godlike? Because she had something in common with God. Creation. She created life. Woman is the creator of life. And you see again, just to reiterate, that we're talking here about the sixth day of creation. So man did his thing on that day. Karashemos, he gave names to the animals. He participated in defining the world around him. Whereas Chava was involved in another activity, giving birth to children. Giving birth, of course, is a very heady experience. And no doubt that induced in Chava feelings of superiority, of grandeur, even of godliness. But just like God created, so too she created. Of course, if that was unchecked, then that too would be fatal to her spiritual growth. So how then was the sense of godliness, this great power that she had, limited as well? Well, according to Rashi, one way is that she, in terms of their relations, she would be much more reticent. She wouldn't go out to seek necessarily the fulfillment of her desires. Man will be given a dominant role in that. By the way, obviously it hasn't always worked out well for the man in that sense, because men, the notion of the male as a predator is one that's pretty common today, and sad to say, men are finding it more difficult to rein in their Yetzer Hara. But obviously, you see that, Chazal understood a certain pathetic quality that man had. You know, how many people risk their lives, their careers, from the White House to the rabbinate to anything in between, not that the rabbinate's the one to the totem pole, risk it on, sexual hijinks that are just unimaginable to thinking people. Why is that? Because that's the consequence of a Yetzirah mibifnim, all right, that always has to be monitored, always has to be checked, and controlled for sure. Right, so look, man is almost by nature a promiscuous being, but you just look at the immorality that's rampant in society today. You know, women have the power to end male promiscuity overnight, by just saying no until they're married. I can't blame the women. I can't blame the men either, because they're also acting the nature. But something has to give. It's probably a combination of both. Yeah. Okay, so in this capacity, regarding this aspect of their relationship, women are much more powerful than men are, because the man is weak. Women have the capacity to induce men to sin, to do crazy things, and frankly, quite easily. So that power has to be harnessed, and it has to be reduced, and it has to be limited, and therefore, all of the klalos of Chava were in the realm of family and family life. So Chava's areas of potential haughtiness had to be constrained. What's the first way of doing it? That if she's going to engage, she's going to live promiscuously, then there are going to be consequences. What are the consequences? Itzvonech, heronech, bisar gilbonim, that it's just not going to be an innocuous but pleasurable act. It's going to be an act that has consequences as well, that produce some pain, some suffering, some real life-changing, life-altering consequences. By the way, note they're not klalos in the sense that they're bad, all right? What's a klalo? Milashon kal. It means to make something lighter, all right? Chava had to be made a little lighter because she had a power that would corrupt both herself and her husband. And future generations should have to be lightened. She had to be recreated or redefined, all right? Like a bracha is something that adds weight to a certain individual. A klal is something that lightens the individual. Something else had to be done as well because she had this power. Oh, by the way, all the pain, the suffering, etc., that also circumscribes the haughtiness aspect, because obviously God is a borei olam without any pain, but a woman as a borat, that's going to have pain as well, and therefore that takes away some, but not all of the feeling. A woman still has the feeling, and it's understandable, of creating life, giving birth to life. Something else was needed as well, that the family unit had to be kept in check because of the natural tension that would exist between man's desires and the consequences that flow therefrom. So they love teshuka. So, as the pasuk says, the elishech teshuka sech, that she will always yearn for her husband. So there's gratification for him. There could be pain for her, but nonetheless, like the Ramban said, she will still be inclined towards him and be loyal to him, have a natural bond with him. V'hu yimshal bach, and he will rule over you. So how is that? And again, I just reiterate what I said earlier, but I think it's in two ways that are historically true. One is economic dependence. If men and women were economically independent, they would soon live parallel, separate lives. And it does happen, by the way, that you can live parallel, separate lives. I mean, people have two careers, especially two bicoastal careers. They don't really have a family. There's no unit there. So in economic dependence, simply by virtue of the fact, think of agricultural times, a woman is less capable of being a farmer or a hunter or a sower, etc. Much more domesticated. She takes the animals and cooks them, takes the wheat and grinds and bakes, etc. The economic dependence was not a punishment as much as it was a phenomenon that brought men and women together. That a man would have a natural inclination to support and a woman have a natural inclination to receive. And that dovetail with a second type of memshala, better dependency than rule, and that is a psychological dependence. V'yim shabach means a woman becomes psychologically dependent on a man in a way that men are not necessarily towards the woman, and it couldn't work the other way. That we see from the Torah itself. Man is the conqueror. Go out and conquer the land. Puravu umilos artzvi chivshua. The man is a kovesh, a conqueror, means that he retains a greater sense of independence, and a woman has a greater sense of dependence. Dependence is not inferiority. I mean, I think, in fact, it's the dependence that creates that type of bond, that type of loyalty that holds the family unit together. As this marriage, as a formality, because otherwise, trust me, a man would go and procreate here, there, and everywhere, and just evaporate, because that's how men are. And the reality is, in societies where men can get away with that, and it's an epidemic in America, it's exactly what they do. So if you're going to have a relationship that doesn't have any type of dependence at all, the man is not going to hang around. So the Torah ideally created that man should feel a need for a woman to maintain him, his home, his children, etc. And a woman should feel that need for a man as well. So in fact, Chava's procreative abilities could not be allowed to upset the spiritual balance that existed. So she was given a very powerful maternal drive as well. And that becomes the last statement in this parsha. Vayikra Adam Shem Eshto Chava, ki hi haisa em kol chai. He called her rather Chava, because now he recognized the power, and he recognized what would hold the family unit together. He recognized what her essence would be, not as Isha, just a part of him, but really as a Chava, as a Chaya Em Kochai, as the giver of life, as the mother of all life. That would become her her primary role. That would become her primary approach towards life. So in fact, both pregnancy and the desire for her husband lead her to accept this role because she wants to be in the family unit. And then man accommodates that as well to the best of his limited ability. Now, something else here also. You see in number 12, as part of our story, Uladam Amar, Ki Shamata Lekol Ishtecho, since you listened to your wife, and you ate from the tree against my command, so you have to suffer. So it sounds like listening to the wife is a bad idea, right? Oh, but look at the next pasuk. Vayomer Elokim el Avraham, it's a parshas Vayera. So they were confronted with a situation where Yishmael's existence was endangering the spiritual viability of Yitzchak. So Sarah said, you have to get rid of him. Avram said, no, it's his son. God said to Avram, Al yera beinecha l'narval masecha. Don't be too aggrieved. Kol asher tamar lecha sora shma bekola. Listen to whatever Sarah tells you, listen to her. I said, how do we get to Adam being punished? Ki shemat l'kol ashtecha. And Avram being told, no, listen to what she has to say. All right. How do you know whether to listen or not? One guy listened and he was sunk. Other guy listened and the world was saved. How do you know when to do it? Isn't that the test of life? How do you know when to do it? That is the question. So that's Ezer Kenegdo. If a person's in the right environment, there's a certain amount of trust. And you know she'll make a good decision. Otherwise, then you really don't know. I want to add one thing. So you see, both had to be limited, as I said, in their areas of potential sin. Man is a conqueror, so man is a pursuer of taiva, so his taivas had to be limited as well, as well as his capacity for gratification had to be limited, and chava in the realm of womanhood, childbirth, family, etc. Which is harder, earning a living or childbirth? What do you say? Don't think too much. The next medrash, Parsha Chaf, number 14. Be'itzavon tachalena, Amar bi'asi, kasha hi aparnasa kiflayim kileida. Earning a living is twice as hard as childbirth. Be'leida ksiv be'etzev tel dibanim. It says be'etzev lashen yachid, parnasa be'itzavon tachalena. Earning a living is hard. All right, so why is it harder? Like you said before, childbirth is momentary, okay? Parnasa is ongoing, and people literally give their sweat, their blood, their toil, to their energy, their vitality, to earning a living. So it becomes much more difficult. So you see, I cited here of Dessler as well in the fourth volume of Michtov Melio. And he speaks about one thing that affected both of them, and that is ego. They both looked at the world through their own needs, Adam's own needs and Chava's own needs. L'shemat nal Adam hargashas anochias chazak hakol kach. So why then was mankind given such a powerful sense of self that they would seek this gratification? So Rav Dessler writes that it's clear that this very strong yearning is necessary. Because if a person didn't have the desire to be a conqueror like man, a creator like woman, nothing would ever get done. We would never be able to rise. We'd never really have any aspirations. It's the ego that drives man and woman, lagiel dargot gvahot pavodat Hashem, to achieve great levels, great heights in service of God. If we push ourselves, we only push ourselves because we have an innate desire to achieve, to accomplish, and that becomes a function of ego. A healthy sense of self is needed for Avodas Hashem. And so in the beginning, the very beginning, on the sixth day, that sense of self was exaggerated and led to man's demise, so to speak. or at least transformation. But that ego was kept, retained, even after the klolos, even after the recreation of man and woman, in order to make sure there's a harmonious balance, that each one is challenged, but each one has the wherewithal to overcome those challenges. I should add that one thing that's changed in our world is a book that just came out, I think in the last month. I saw the review of it in the Wall Street Journal. I think it's entitled The Pill. And The Pill really changed this checks and balances that existed in the world, because it enabled women, basically, not talking about anybody here, of course, but enabled women to be promiscuous without consequences. And that really changed the entire dynamic. Certainly the moral equation has shifted dramatically and probably irreparably in the last 50, that's almost 60 years, 60 years, I think, since the pill became more widespread in American life. And as a result, something else happened as well. I mean, marriage is down, you know, broken homes are much more common. And I think importantly, the happiness level has decreased also. That I think people thought, men thought, and women thought, they'd be happier living a more libertine lifestyle. And I think in retrospect, they haven't, because we know from our world, I mean, what's happiness? You get together with family, children, grandchildren, Yom Tov, that's v'samachta v'chagecha. Is it imaginable to have a v'samachta v'chagecha without family around you? It's not. And that's the tremendous bracha, that we really remain that outpost in the world, representing not just the traditional morality, but representing as well God's vision of what men and women are supposed to do, supposed to accomplish, and supposed to reflect in order to become Avdei Hashem. So you say it's a bracha that we retain that vision. It is a bracha, but it's also our mandate. It's exactly why we are created, we were created as a people, in order to retain that very vision, that model, so the world could see how we live and gain from it. When we stumble, of course, it shatters our image, at least momentarily. But nonetheless, I still maintain that despite the aberrations, I think people recognize with admiration, if not even with a bit of envy, that what we have in our world is something that is desirable. And all other things being considered, what we contribute to mankind and what we represent to mankind is the fulfillment of the divine ideal. We should only be worthy of it in our homes, in our community, and all Klal Yisrael as well. Okay, I thank you all very much.